Chapter 25. Nan and Di were going to school. They started the last week in August.
Will we know everything by night, Mummy?
Asked Di solemnly the first morning. Now, in early September, Anne and Susan had got used to it, and even took pleasure in seeing the two mites trip off every morning, so tiny and carefree and neat, thinking going to school quite an adventure. They always took an apple in their basket for teacher, and they wore frocks of pink and blue ruffled gingham. Since they did not look in the least alike, they were never dressed alike. Diana, with her red hair, could not wear pink, but it suited Nan, who was much the prettier of the Ingleside twins. She had brown eyes, brown hair, and a lovely complexion, of which she was quite aware even at 7. A certain starriness had gone into the fashioning of her. She held her head proudly, with her little saucy chin a wee bit in evidence, and so was already thought rather stuck up.
"She'll imitate all her mother's tricks and poses," said Mrs. Alec Davies. "She has all her airs and graces already, if you ask me."
The twins were dissimilar in more than looks. Di, in spite of her physical resemblance to her mother, was very much her father's child, so far as disposition and qualities went. She had the beginnings of his practical bent, his plain common sense, his twinkling sense of humor. Nan had inherited in full her mother's gift of imagination, and was already making life interesting for herself in her own way. For example, she had had no end of excitement this summer making bargains with God, the gist of the matter being, "If you'll do such and such a thing, I'll do such and such a thing." All the Ingleside children had been started in life with the old classic, "Now I lay me," then promoted to "Our Father," then encouraged to make their own small petitions also in whatever language they chose. What gave Nan the idea that God might be induced to grant her petitions by promise of good behavior or displays of fortitude would be hard to say. Perhaps a certain rather young and pretty Sunday school teacher was indirectly responsible for it, by her frequent admonitions that if they were not good girls, God would not do this or that for them. It was easy to turn this idea inside out and come to the conclusion that if you were this or that, did this or that, you had a right to expect that God would do the things you wanted. Nan's first bargain in the spring had been so successful that it outweighed some failures, and she had gone on all summer. Nobody knew of it, not even Di. Nan hugged her secret and took to praying at sundry times and in diverse places, instead of only at night. Di did not approve of this and said so.
"Don't mix God up with everything," she told Nan severely. "You make him too common."
Anne, overhearing this, rebuked her and said, "God is in everything, dear. He is the friend who is always near us to give strength and courage, and Nan is quite right in praying to him and where she wants to." Though if Anne had known the truth about her small daughter's devotions, she would have been rather horrified. Nan had said one night in May,
"If you'll make my tooth grow in before Amy Taylor's party next week, dear God, I'll take every dose of castor oil Susan gives me without a bit of fuss."
The very next day, the tooth, whose absence had made such an unsightly and too prolonged gap in Nan's pretty mouth, had appeared, and by the day of the party was fully through. What more certain sign could you want than that? Nan kept her side of the compact faithfully, and Susan was amazed and delighted whenever she administered castor oil after that. Nan took it without a grimace or protest, though she sometimes wished she had set a time limit, say for 3 months. God did not always respond, but when she asked him to send her a special button for her button string, collecting buttons had broken out everywhere among the Glen's small girls, like the measles, assuring him that if he did, she would never make a fuss when Susan set the chip plate for her, the button came the very next day, Susan having found one on an old dress in the attic. A beautiful red button set with tiny diamonds, or what Nan believed to be diamonds.
She was the envied of all because of that elegant button. And when Di refused the chipped plate that night, Nan said virtuously, "Give it to me, Susan. I'll always take it after this." Susan thought she was angelically unselfish and said so, whereupon Nan both looked and felt smug. She got a fine day for the Sunday school picnic, when everyone predicted rain the night before, by promising to brush her teeth every morning without being told. Her lost ring was restored on the condition that she kept her fingernails scrupulously clean. And when Walter handed over his picture of a flying angel, which Nan had long coveted, she ate the fat with the lean uncomplainingly at dinner thereafter. When, however, she asked God to make her battered and patched teddy bear young again, promising to keep her bureau drawer tidy, something struck a snag. Teddy did not grow young, though Nan looked for the miracle anxiously every morning and wished God would hurry. Finally, she resigned herself to Teddy's age. After all, he was a nice old bear, and it would be awfully hard to keep that old bureau drawer tidy. When Dad brought her home a new teddy bear, she didn't really like it, and, though with sundry misgivings of her small conscience, decided she need not take any special pains with the bureau drawer. Her faith returned when, having prayed that the missing eye of her china cat would be restored, the eye was in its place next morning, though somewhat askew, giving the cat a rather cross-eyed aspect. Susan had found it when sweeping and stuck it in with glue. But Nan did not know this, and cheerfully carried out her promise of walking 14 times round the barn on all fours. What good walking 14 times round the barn on all fours could do God or anybody else, Nan did not stop to consider, but she hated doing it. The boys were always wanting her and Di to pretend they were some kind of animals in Rainbow Valley, and perhaps there was some vague thought in her budding mind that penance might be pleasing to the mysterious being who gave or withheld at pleasure. At any rate, she thought out several weird stunts that summer, causing Susan to wonder frequently where on earth children got the notions they did. "Why do you suppose, Mrs. Dr. Dear, that Nan must go twice around the living room every day without walking on the floor?" "Without walking on the floor? How does she manage it, Susan?" "By jumping from one piece of furniture to the other, including the fender. She slipped on that yesterday and pitched headfirst into the coal shuttle. Mrs. Dr. Dear, do you suppose she needs a dose of worm medicine?" That year was always referred to in the Ingleside Chronicles as the one in which Dad almost had pneumonia and Mother had it. One night, Anne, who already had a nasty cold, went with Gilbert to a party in Charlottetown, wearing a new and very becoming dress and Jem's string of pearls. She looked so well in it that all the children who had come in to see her before she left thought it was wonderful to have a mother you could be so proud of. "Such a nice swishy petticoat," sighed Nan. "When I grow up, will I have taffety petticoats like that, Mummy?"
"I doubt if girls will be wearing petticoats at all by that time," said Dad. "I'll back water, Anne, and admit that dress is a stunner, even if I didn't approve of the sequins. Now, don't try to vamp me, woman. I've paid you all the compliments I'm going to tonight. Remember what we read in the medical journal today? Life is nothing more than delicately balanced organic chemistry. And let it make you humble and modest. Sequins, indeed. Taffeta petticoat, forsooth. We're nothing but a fortuitous concatenation of atoms. The great Dr. von Bemberg says so."
"Don't quote that horrible von Bemberg to me. He must have a bad case of chronic indigestion. He may be a concatenation of atoms, but I am not." In a few days thereafter, Anne was a very sick concatenation of atoms, and Gilbert a very anxious one. Susan went about looking harassed and tired, and the trained nurse came and went with an anxious face, and a nameless shadow suddenly swooped and spread and darkened at Ingleside. The children were not told of the seriousness of their mother's illness, and even Jem did not realize it fully. But they all felt the chill and the fear, and went softly and unhappily. For once there was no laughter in the Maple Grove, and no games in Rainbow Valley. But the worst of all was that they were not allowed to see Mother. No mother meeting them with smiles when they came home. No mother slipping in to kiss them good night. No mother to soothe and sympathize and understand. No mother to laugh over jokes with. Nobody ever laughed like Mother. It was far worse than when she was away, because then you knew she was coming back, and now you knew just nothing. Nobody would tell you anything. They just put you off. Nan came home from school very pale over something Amy Taylor had told her.
"Susan, is Mother isn't... She isn't going to die, Susan."
"Of course not," said Susan, too sharply and quickly. Her hands trembled as she poured out Nan's glass of milk. "Who has been talking to you?"
"Amy. She said, oh, Susan, she said she thought Mother would make such a sweet-looking corpse."
"Never you mind what she said, my pet. The Taylors all have wagging tongues. Your blessed mother is sick enough, but she is going to pull through, and that you may tie to. Do you not know that your father is at the helm?"
"God wouldn't let Mother die, would he, Susan?" asked a white-lipped Walter, looking at her with the grave intentness that made it very hard for Susan to utter her comforting lies. She was terribly afraid they were lies. Susan was a badly frightened woman. The nurse had shaken her head that afternoon. The doctor had refused to come down to supper.
"I suppose the Almighty knows what he's about," muttered Susan as she washed the supper dishes, and broke three of them. But for the first time in her honest, simple life, she doubted it. Nan wandered unhappily around. Dad was sitting by the library table with his head in his hands. The nurse went in, and Nan heard her say she thought the crisis would come that night.
"What is a crisis?" she asked Di. "I think it is what a butterfly hatches out of," said Di cautiously. "Let's ask Jem."
Jem knew, and told them before he went upstairs to shut himself in his room. Walter had disappeared. He was lying face downward under the white lady in Rainbow Valley. And Susan had taken Shirley and Rilla off to bed. Nan went out alone and sat down on the steps. Behind her in the house was a terrible, unaccustomed quiet. Before her, the glen was brimming with evening sunshine, but the long red road was misty with dust, and the bent grasses in the harbor fields were burned white in the drought. It had not rained for weeks, and the flowers drooped in the garden, the flowers Mother had loved. Nan was thinking deeply. Now, if ever, was the time to bargain with God. What would she promise to do if he made Mother well? It must be something tremendous, something that would make it worth his while. Nan remembered what Dickie Drew had said to Stanley Reese in school one day. "I dare you to walk through the graveyard after night." Nan had shuddered at the time. How could anybody walk through the graveyard after night? How could anyone even think of it? Nan had a horror of the graveyard not a soul in Ingleside suspected. Amy Taylor had once told her it was full of dead people.
"And they don't always stay dead," said Amy, darkly and mysteriously.
Nan could hardly bring herself to walk past it alone in broad daylight. Far away, the trees on a misty golden hill were touching the sky. Nan had often thought if she could get to that hill, she could touch the sky too. God lived just on the other side of it. He might hear you better there. But she could not get to that hill. She must just do the best she could here at Ingleside. She clasped her little sunburned paws and lifted her tear-stained face to the sky.
"Dear God," she whispered, "if you make Mother get well, I'll walk through the graveyard after night. Oh, dear God, please, please. And if you do this, I won't bother you for ever so long again.